discussion going on right now. I assume when there is a call of the House, if there is one, they'll probably come pull us. Oh, right, but this is a call to get quorum, right?
Yes, sir.
So they're good, I think they have us excused from that purpose, but they'll come get us, I think, if there's a real call. We are going to start tonight. I had the agenda this evening is relatively limited. We're going to have some invited testimony. First, we're going to start with Keith Kubik from Douglas County, who's the planning director. He's going to come up and chat with us for a few minutes about some information that he has, after which we'll have Sue Hanna from Legislative Council walk us through on a section-by-section analysis that Representative Close had requested of the current version of the draft that has been under discussion by the committee. So that's what's intended for the committee this afternoon. Before we move into that, is there any business that any of the committee members have? We're pleased, even though the floor is meeting, to have the majority leader with us.
Thank you.
This afternoon.
Yes, sir.
And Representative Schrader will refrain from shooting rubber bands or other objects at anyone else on the committee. Okay, we will go ahead and start and bring Mr. Kubik forward then. And a person with him who will be introduced.
We'll have the same name.
Sure. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Keith Kubik. I'm planning director for Douglas County, Oregon, and my business address is Room 106, Justice Building Courthouse, Roseburg, Oregon. Also attending with me today is Dave Cameraman, a principal planner with Douglas County, who's assisted me on preparing comments and developing information about transferable development rights and on participating in legislative review for the county. So Dave may have a better answer to a question you asked than I have, and I ask him to come along today.
Welcome. Please proceed.
I presented some written materials to your staff that hopefully are at your place. I would like to do two things today. I'd like to bring to you some information about transferable development rights and the potential application of them to the Oregon system, and also provide to you comments about the May 10th draft concept paper on the rural retroactive concepts for Measure 7. I'll start by just a quick introduction. Douglas County has studied transferable development rights as they apply nationally and as they might be applied in the state of Oregon. We've followed the committee work. We've provided comments on the prospective or urban section of the proposal. And in addition, we provided to your staff, and I think might be available at least to the committee, different publications that we've done on transferable development rights. So there's a series of four documents that we provided to staff that are available. Today I've prepared comments for the committee on transferable development rights generally, and then detailed comments on the rural or retroactive piece of the Measure 7 solution. My comments are offered to you as a planning director for Douglas County, as an Oregon professional for 30 years, and I do have to say I was a planner in Oregon prior to the LCDC being created by a couple of years. My comments are also as a native Oregonian and someone who represents rural Oregon. My comments are also based on my personal commitment to Oregon planning, my belief in public service and a customer focus, and the values of my Board of County Commissioners. I want to thank you for this opportunity. Transferable development rights are generally an urban issue, and applying them to rural areas is a departure from their initial use. Rural transferable development rights can be easily undermined. The significant ways to an ineffective program include ignoring market, not identifying adequate receiving areas, and making a system that's far too complicated. Transferable development rights or transferable development credits generally are used to build additional dwellings, to provide bonuses or incentives on property in identified areas. Some examples that would be familiar to you, I believe, would be a planned unit development uses a transferable development right concept where you get some kind of density bonus if you preserve a natural feature or an amenity on one portion of a property. You're allowed to develop more intensely, or in fact you're allowed to relax standards in another portion of the property for a preservation on the same property. Another concept or another application besides planned unit developments where we see that concept, is to preserve open space. If you take an example of an urban place waterfront, there might be a desire to preserve the waterfront, and to do that, a city might offer a increased density, an increase of intensity, or a relaxation of standards a block back, a street block back, or a short distance away from that waterfront to another development to enable the preservation of the waterfront area. What we found in our study of transferable development rights is specifically that they are event-driven and they need to be economically feasible. What that means is they need some kind of catalyst. And that is a concern when we look at applying development rights in rural Oregon. What's the catalyst? What's the economic incentive? What's the bonus that usually goes along with them? What's the trade? The trade is not usually a basic property right, but it's an addition to basic property rights that you deal with when you deal with transferable development rights. In the materials that I provided to you, and I'm going to review each point, there's a summary of common features of effective transferable development rights program. They're there. They're in front of you. There's a brief summary of each of those. I would like to offer a conclusion about our research, our study, the materials that you have as it regards to transferable development rights in the Oregon system. Transferable development rights are a value-added, market-driven planning tool. They are not a fairness issue. They're largely an intensification tool. They trade one right for another. They're not designed to give back a basic property right. Applying a transferable development right to rural Oregon may not proved to be a useful option in the case of the law that you're trying to address. A more direct approach, in my opinion, as a rural planner, at dealing with divisions of land that would previously been possible, dealing with dwellings, would be either a no-build option where the state would compensate owners who are impacted, or B, a new exception. That would be authorization of an exception to the statewide planning goals or rules in light of Measure 7 claims. This would be using our current process. It will allow Measure 7 claim to be resolved through an exceptions process. And currently, exceptions have to be based on reasons. And the only reason you would have to demonstrate is that there was a Measure 7 claim. It's simple and clean. But those might be alternatives that you would consider. Oregon must be careful in establishing a program that ends up not being a solution because of lack of market, lack of interest, or complexity. I do not believe the transferable development rights are the answer to equity and fairness solution for individual dwellings and for previously possible divisions. There's more transferable development rights information with you. I would be prepared to go on to talk about your proposal now, unless you have questions about that section.
Yes,
of my...
Representative Schrader.
A question on how you use the term exception in your latter discussion here. Are you talking about creating new exception lands? Are you talking about a build option, or are you talking about a varying the standard of build option?
An exception is right now within the rules a way that you can vary the standards of Oregon's law. You can vary the types of uses. You may be able to vary, let's say, the density of uses. You may be able to vary the location of uses as it relates to your planning process. So the exception is, on a grand scale, it would be considered a variance process to the statewide planning goals.
Thank you.
Yes, Betsy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along the same lines, I guess the word exception, we've had testimony on variances in other states. Is that the similar concept or not?
No. A variance is very specific, situational to a land use application. A variance says, let's just say the parking standards for a small commercial are two units per 200 square feet. Someone doesn't have that much land. They ask for a variance to alter those. They justify why. You make a decision. Variances are usually based on some standards. An exception allows you to alter what would already or previously be limitations on use. And the exceptions process is usually used as part of your planning process rather than your case-by-case land use process. In a general look at them, an exception and a variance, they would have a parallel. And you could say that a variance normally is case-specific, an exception is related to your planning process.
Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
Are you familiar with the land use system in Florida?
I generally.
Okay, well, it sounds, what they described to us in the Florida situation sounded more like an exception to me. What they're calling a variance, is that possible?
Yes, very similar. Again, in Oregon, the terms are different, but the outcome kind of results in the same product.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Morgan?
When we're talking about transferable development rights, is the concept more amenable to a forward-looking fix rather than a backward-looking fix?
A transferable development right is really development right, development density, development credit, whatever it might be, is really, it's solutions oriented toward future development. It doesn't address well something that's happened in the past.
Representative Scherer.
To the extent that exceptions are used, should they be done in a coordinated fashion to avoid a patchwork of different types of uses that maybe were not originally intended in the planning goals and the subsequent zoning that developed from them?
One of the key things about if we tried to use our existing exceptions process, since it is a plan amendment process at this time, it has to be coordinated. Local governments have that responsibility. It's reviewed by agencies, reviewed by neighbors, it's reviewed by the Department of Land Conservation and Development. You could, as the broader you made an exceptions process or variance process, you could have a patchwork quilt look to your planning. The problem that we face now, and I'd like to give you just a specific situation. We have in rural Oregon, this is not untypical of a lot of areas, we had a parcel in an area called Dixonville. This parcel had 4 homes on it. It was in a fairly good quality agricultural area. The property owners came and said, we're not using all 4 dwellings for our farm. We want to segregate one of them. We said, you cannot. And they could not. Rather than having some kind of exception process or even what you might term a variance process in that case, they went through a plan amendment, zone change, and now we have a spot of rural residential zoning in the midst of a fairly good agricultural area. We believe that we would have been better off to have more flexibility in an exceptions or variance process than having to go through that plan amendment to change that to rural residential. But that kind of thing could happen.
Yes, please, Representative Scherer.
Trying to follow up on your comment about how to use them in a more prospective looking forward nature. Using your example there, would a preferred alternative perhaps have been to not have a build option there, but perhaps look at some sort of transferable development right to a portion of the Dixon Springs, the nearest town of any size, where there's likely to be some future opportunity for increased value of that land?
Could have been. It's part of the comments that I relate to your proposal later can address that topic. Could have been. There are some cases that I think there could be a public interest that an acquisition of a development right or compensation could be appropriate. And in some cases, it has a huge impact. In some cases, it has a nominal impact. But a transfer to say no in one place and allow that property owner to use that benefit somewhere else is an option. But what we've found is there usually is some bonus component. It's transferring. There's an incentive beyond just your basic right. And that's one of the key features that we have seen in TDR programs. There's some additional incentive.
That's another question. I don't want to belabor everything. This is very helpful to get our hands around this because you've had a lot of experience. In trying to follow through your comments, I would think that it would be of some advantage for the local communities, at least in the various counties, to have a discussion as one develops this process about where added value may occur if you do this. In other words, there are some communities that are not going to grow or prefer not to grow in a certain manner, and the trends, the county people, the realtors, perhaps the commercial individuals have a better feel for where transfer development rights, the receiving areas, might be of greater value, and then that would be an opportunity to get local involvement to see if this sort of system could actually work.